Good afternoon. My name is Gail Oram, and I'm from Charles R. Drew University in Los Angeles, California. My topic is multidisciplinary investigational intervention on reducing polypharmacy and enhancing adherence to drug regimens among underserved elderly African Americans. I am presenting, but our PI on the project is Dr. Mohsen Bazargan, who cannot be here today, but I declare that I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existing in the last 12 months, so I have no disclosures. And neither does Dr. Bazargan. The background and significance of this study, as Dr. Poon already has discussed, in our study, we're looking at polypharmacy primarily, which means that a person is taking multiple medications and has a number of things that occur as a result, maybe excessive hospital admissions, adverse drug events, and non-adherence refers to anyone who is not adhering to a particular regimen. So they are different but related. And in this aging African-American population, there are many reasons why they would not adhere to prescription medications. It may be because of beliefs. It may be because of adverse drug reactions. And we found, similar to as Dr. Poon, that roughly one-third of all of our subjects were not adherent to medications. And here you see the specific aims of our studies, looking to reduce the use of duplicate drugs in dosages and frequencies greater than necessary, or eliminate or reduce drug therapy that is not essential for treating or managing a medical problem. We see a lot of this with medications that have recently gone from prescription to over-the-counter, like Prilosec, where there's a prescription Prilosec and the subject is taking another one on his or her own. Of course, we want to increase adherence to drug regimens, and we want to increase the involvement of underserved aging African Americans as informed and active partners in their health care. And this is important to empower the subjects to really see themselves as advocates for their own health care. In this research design, we had a survey where we have a pre-experimental one-group pre-test, post-test design, and the outcomes of interest are measured before and after the intervention. We surveyed over 275 African Americans. These are the ones that we've really gone through and looked at all the data. The ages were, 65 to 95 years of age, from 16 churches and community centers in the South Los Angeles area. And I don't know if you can see this very well, but here are the senior centers that we were going to, and this is an area, if any of you are familiar with Los Angeles, used to be known as South Central Los Angeles. So when you see Boys in the Hood or any of those films, this is that area. Charles R. Drew University is located here in the Watts area, and this gives you an idea in this area of what we're dealing with. Recently, in the last few years, our major hospital closed in this area as well. So there's underserved with respect not only to medications but also to medical facilities. And this is pretty much the same thing, but you can see the more affluent areas over here, Marina del Rey, Playa del Rey, and Beverly Hills is up here somewhere. So, but here we are, here in this area. Just want you to know. So we collected a lot of data, quality of life, pain severity, health locus of control, cognitive deficit, and we also looked at all of the prescription drugs, all the over-the-counter medications, and we asked people to bring in anything that they were taking that was herbal or a home remedy. We wanted to try and get a full picture. And we had a lot of interesting things that we found. We found a lot of expired medications. We informed the providers in case of poor adherence. We also want the physicians to know if subjects were taking complementary alternative medications. And we contacted the pharmacist if there was a mislabeled or a label on the container was unclear. And so we asked the subjects, what do you need this medication for? How long are you going to be taking it? How do you know this is the right thing for you? And so I've reviewed, as a team pharmacist, these surveys and these documents. Our average age for the subject was 74 years of age, and the ones that were at risk for polypharmacy were contacted within 2 weeks to make sure that we didn't wait too long before we really intervened. And then we're doing a reassessment 6 months after. So out of the subjects, the mean age was 74. More than 50% take 8 or more medications daily. The most we ever found was 22 medications and over-the-counter medications, everything in one person, and more than 2,000 prescription and over-the-counter agents across the 275 participants. 32% demonstrate serious problems, and we had to send letters to their physicians regarding that. So the most common was poor general knowledge, where people thought, you know, one drug was for hypertension and it actually was for, you know, something else, you know. And it really helped the subjects to be able to just discuss it. And we found it was very positive and very well received. And poor adherence follows closely at 38%. And so this is pretty much the same thing, but we end up sending letters to roughly one-third of all participants. Now, in line with some of the things that Dr. Poon has discussed, we also realize that this is a population, the elderly African-American, that is prone to have resistant hypertension. And resistant hypertension is defined as a blood pressure of 140 over 90 if you have no other compelling disease states. And you're taking 3 or more medications and you're still not at goal. If you look at the JNC7 guidelines, you know, you give medications until you get control. And if you're on 3 or more and you still don't have control and you happen to be an aging person, your chances are very difficult to manage your hypertension. And what happens too, there are many things that happen as a result. You know, heart failure can result, hospitalizations. And some of the causes of resistant hypertension are non-compliance with treatment, not adhering, fluid retention, secondary hypertension. And there's something in the literature, too, that talks about differentiating resistant hypertension from pseudo-resistant hypertension, which has to do with people just not taking the medication. Here we're not talking about just not taking the medication. We're talking about, you know, someone taking multiple drugs or taking extra of one or the other. And this is hospital admissions in probably some other state besides California, because in California, hospital admissions is very expensive. And once heart failure occurs, there's a very high rate of readmission within the same year. So this is a big challenge. We're seeing, too, that medical conditions are worsening as a result of drug utilization with the elderly. And here you see primarily the essential hypertension, that from 1998 to 2008, you get a 62% increase. Cardiac dysrhythmias, you get a 139% increase. And of course, we can't leave out diabetes at 45% increase. And then, of course, disorders of lipid metabolism at 150%. So, and then these disorders of the urinary system. So we can look at this for some time. If you look at the age group of 65 years and older, this is our population here, you can see that, you have more surgery from 78 to 2008 and more medical. So there's less primary care intervention in that age group, which really needs to go the other way. There needs to be more primary care, more prevention, more interdisciplinary approaches to managing hypertension. So in our project, quickly, we originally looked at about 216. 35% of them had the resistant hypertension. We found it to be higher in males than females, which was interesting because a lot of the data shows the other way around. And then these subjects had higher incidence of diabetes, kidney disease, other heart problems, migraine, headaches, etc. Some of these subjects had not seen their doctors or had seen their doctors more than 5 times in the last 12 months. So they were either under accessing health care or not at all. And, of course, there was a higher rate of hospitalization among the resistant hypertensives, and a lot of them were non-adherent to drug regimens. Either they forgot frequently to do a refill, were taking medications in other ways. And so this is a risk for not only to the patient's health, but also to higher health care costs and to increase morbidity or mortality. So this is why this is really important to bring this under control. Now, how can it be brought under control? Well, of course, there needs to be adherence to medication regimens. That's the primary method. However, medication adherence alone is not going to be enough. There needs to be support for lifestyle modification, including reducing weight, increasing regular, moderate physical activity, alcohol intake, and here one of my typos I didn't catch, type of smoking cessation, and use of the DASH. That means I really mean it, that they must stop smoking. The DASH diet, of course, is a diet that is going to help these subjects considerably, where very few processed meats, low in saturated fat, and mostly fruits, vegetables, and fish. And this shows that if we can just get small decreases in blood pressure, then we can reduce significantly the risk of ischemic heart disease and significantly a 10% reduction in stroke mortality with a 2 millimeter mercury decrease in systolic blood pressure. So we can do better is the answer here to this question. So briefly, if we lower hypertension by an average of 10 over 4 millimeters per mercury, systolic over diastolic, we can reduce stroke by 30%, cardiovascular complications by 26%, coronary events by 23%, and cardiovascular mortality by 18%. And I've done a similar presentation before, and I just wanted to highlight just one case where we found a 72-year-old female who skips all of her medications with the exception of one medication every Sunday, because Sunday is her day of worship, and she feels that she should not have to take medications that day. She's also taking a blood thinner warfarin and has been hospitalized for pulmonary embolism in the past year, so she needed to be adherent to that warfarin. But in addition, she's also taking 3 antihypertensives, so she is in this category of resistant hypertension to Razelsyn, Atenolol, and Amlodipine. So she's taking an alpha agent, a beta blocker, and a calcium channel blocker, and so she's someone we have to follow very carefully. So of course, for future studies and challenges, it's the idea of having a complete medication regimen and evaluation, lifestyle modifications with support, because you can't just tell somebody you should eat better, that you really have to assist your community in being healthier, and extensive education of hypertensive persons and their caregivers and their support. And so I'd like to acknowledge at this time Dr. Bakar Husseini, who's really helped provide a lot of guidance in this project, Dr. James Smith, who did a lot of the survey and data collection, Dr. Paul Robinson, who's responsible for the maps, and Reverend Waller, because we used the churches originally to get the recruitment through the community centers. And so, thank you. I guess I'm way over my time.